On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is Radio Fairfax. I'm Sue Bartholomew. You're on the Commons. And on the Commons with us today, we have our old friend, Bill Davis. Bill's an attorney in Texas. Although his specialty is not HOAs, it sort of has become his specialty. Bill, thanks so much for joining us.
Hello, Shu.
Awesome. You're coming across loud and clear, Bill. This is great. You have been doing a lot of work in the HOA field, and you've been following a lot of trends, and you've been reading a lot of articles, and you kind of know a little bit about what's going on all over the country. And so today we're going to talk a little bit about a potpourri of stuff.
Okay.
So we'll be working on that. Now, one of the things that we hear most often in the HOA world is that HOAs are necessary because, among other wonderful things, they protect property values. You're laughing, Bill. No.
Well, you know, that's a deceptive trade practice. I mean, you know, the people that make those claims can't ever back them up. There's no empirical evidence to support that. I do want to distinguish between HOAs and condos when we talk about HOAs, because some people lump them together. But, you know, a condominium is a statutory form of ownership only, and so that it's a different animal than an HOA. But HOAs do not preserve value for anybody except for the vendors of the HOA.
That is true. And the point that you make is well taken, that HOAs and condos are two entirely different animals, except in the sense of the legal ownership of both of them and the fact that one actually comes with real estate and the other doesn't. But they're all subject to the same lunacy, pretty much, that goes on.
The involuntary membership and all the bad things that come with that.
All the bad things. The fact that your property is held hostage by a trade organization and perhaps some of your neighbors. And the reason for that is because they want to control what you do, not only with your property, but how you behave on your property, in your property, and all the other stuff.
So
in that sense, I lump them all together. But being a lawyer, you sort of remind us constantly that there is a little bit of a there's a huge difference. It's more than a little bit of a difference.
Well, there is a big difference, and the industry constantly tries to confuse the two, even the marketing terminology between the two. For example, common areas. You know, HOAs, in condominiums, common areas are commonly owned by the unit owners. It's usually in some undivided percentage interest. You know, like you might have a 1% interest. It might be based upon the number of units, you know, where everyone has it, like on a per capita basis, or it might be based upon a square footage of your unit, where you have a percentage, a relative percentage based upon that. But in the HOA land, there really isn't such a thing as a common area. It's often called a common area. That's a misleading marketing term. People are led to believe that they actually have an ownership interest in it when they don't. They have zero ownership interest in it in an HOA land. And the HOA owns that property, and it can dictate how that property is used. And that's an ongoing problem.
Okay, now, you say they can dictate how that's used because the HOA actually owns it.
Yes.
In a condominium, the condominium still dictates how that is used.
Yes.
But they don't have any, the condominium, the organization or whatever you want to call it, does not have any ownership interests.
Right. It doesn't. Well, at least ordinarily it doesn't. Right. It doesn't. It's a little odd that they're dictating use when you have a when you have an actual ownership interest in it, but your ownership interest is fractional and undivided, and it can't be, you know, drawn to any particular element of the whole common area. I'm not trying to get into details of areas of a special, you know, or limited exclusive use, like your balcony or something like that, that's common area, but it's only for you. You know, generally the structure, you have an undivided percentage interest, ownership interest in it, but you can't point to any particular component. And the condo association is supposed to manage the interests of all the owners, which, of course, we know they never do, at least not for the benefit of the owners. And in the HOA world, this is this constant myth that your property value should somehow be enhanced because of the property that the HOA has. It's not your property. All you have is a liability to pay taxes on it and to maintain it. So you have no ownership interest in it. If anything, it should decrease your property value, not increase it. That has never made sense to me as to why people think that. Realtors do it all the time. They'll claim, oh, you have all these amenities, improves property values, preserves, you know, enhances property values. No, it really shouldn't. Economically, it shouldn't at all.
Well, I totally agree with you because you're, again, we go back to, and I like the fact that you use the word unit as opposed to home because that's pretty much what we have.
You're right.
We live in units. We no longer have houses and homes.
They're not homes. They're units in a project.
Welcome to residential America, right? we've got a unit here, and I like the distinction between the two. And let's talk about yet a third form that we tend to lump into the HOA world, but again, legally, it has an entirely different structure. And those are co-ops. And that's where the corporation owns everything, and you become a member of the corporation, and you get a proprietary lease to live in a unit based on your investment.
Right.
The amount of money you put into it. But again, in all three forms, legally, however they're structured, you have no, pretty much no say, no autonomy, no sovereignty. You don't have a home.
Right. I think there's been some good articles about the tearing down of older public housing because of the intrusion into defensible space. They have eliminated your defensible space. You don't care for the place anymore. It is not a home. You do not want to treat it as a home. It's a myth to call it your property when others have such control and dominion over what is supposedly your property. And the history has already, I should send some of those papers to you, Shu. History's already shown that when you so intrude into someone's defensible space, they're not going to recognize or value ownership of that space because it's been taken from them anyway. There is no defensible space, and one of the fundamental principles of property, or three of them, are the right to exclude others, the right to use and enjoy, and prohibitions against restraint on alienation, meaning your ability to sell. And all three of these rights are largely eviscerated with HOA or condo burdened property. There's a reason why the HOA industry, or the attorneys who draft these documents, refer to them as regimes, because that's what they are, except nobody wants to live in a regime.
You know, they don't.
What's that?
They don't want to live in a regime?
Well, the developer wants you to live in a regime while it's under their control, and board members love it when everybody has to live under the regime of a board member, but, you know, the serfs don't care for it too much.
So, Bill, tell me something. What is it going to take to get the serfs to understand that they're not buying a home, that they're not going to be protected, that their property's values are not going to increase, and that if the pool that is this wonderful carrot that everybody dangles in front of people is mismanaged and needs a whole lot of repairs, then your home or your unit or your investment or whatever you want to call it is held hostage and then becomes a tool to repair that swimming pool.
Right.
Right?
They're just equity stealing devices. I mean, they're not saving or preserving anything for you. It's almost, you know, some people may do okay, but it's almost like a game of musical chairs where the last one, you know, standing is holding the bag. You raise a number of issues which suggest, first of all, choice, which I think is a problem in many places because there isn't really any feasible choice. Even if they knew, because of local government mandates, developer desires, and even federal government mandates, you know, if you got an expanding population and the only housing that's allowed to be built is burdened by an HOA or condominium, then where does the expanding population go other than, you know, there isn't going to be a choice for a significant portion of the population. Second, I think more real estate professionals need to be held liable for misrepresentations. There's a lot of deceptive trade practices going on, unfair trade practices of misrepresenting what people are buying into, omitting disclosure of the liabilities of these things, because that's what they are, and misrepresentation as to the benefits of HOAs. I'm still looking for a benefit. I haven't really seen one. And
you don't like your newsletter.
What's that?
You don't like your newsletter. Isn't that a benefit?
Oh, we don't have a newsletter. We get emails from anonymous, management teams, whoever that's supposed to be.
Well, there's a benefit for you.
Well, and I think a lot more...
clean your yard.
a lot more publication of failure of these things, as opposed to, you know, trying to either ignore coverage of them or treat them as, you know, allegedly isolated instances. They're failing everywhere. I mean, it's not an... Even the industry folks are recognizing and starting to publish papers that these things are doomed to failure, you know, except their solution is to blame the owners and to seek greater powers to extract money from them, you know. You need to... give us your first child and enslave them to pay for the debts of the condo forever, you know, that type of stuff. That's their solution. That's not a solution. But, they're failing.
But they've always been failing. I mean, 20 years ago when I started getting involved in this, the idea was that it is, you're absolutely right, it is the homeowners who are not participating, not running for office, not wanting to take control. I know, and the fact that these things are rigged like you wouldn't believe. And again, the blame, the finger pointing always went to the homeowners because they didn't understand what they bought into. One thing I want to point out, Bill, before we go a whole lot further, is that when you buy a house,
yeah,
it's an emotional purchase.
Yes. Yeah.
You walk in there and you don't buy a house because of, you know, because of the way it looks, because you can do whatever you want. A lot of people will just look at some of the restrictions and say, well, I can live with that. You know, it's not too bad. I don't mind if my hose is green instead of red. It's not a big problem. But you know what? This house reminds me of Grandma's house. Or when I walked in, the owner had put some brownies in the oven, and the scent of chocolate brownies baking just made me feel right at home. And so people buy based on emotion, and I don't know how to overcome that. Any thoughts?
Well,
how do you overcome an emotional purchase?
And people also buy these homes to raise their families in, not as if it was some stock. That, you know, the industry would have you believe that all these people are sophisticated investors that came out and purchased this and intended to preserve, you know, some developer view into the future, into perpetuity, and that was somehow going to be an assurance of prosperity and marketability for all the homes, and, you know, that's just absurd. I don't know. I think the emotional thing is going to exist no matter what.
Yeah, I think the fact that you're buying a home, what you end up with is a unit, if it's in an HOA. But you're buying a home, and that's where the emotional purchase comes in. And so when we talk about educating the public, one of our big stumbling blocks is going to be overcoming that emotional purchase, the emotional attachment. That
right.
When you walk in, people say, I walked in the front door and I knew that this was going to be my home. Never mind what condition the house was in, never mind any of the other stuff. It was just they knew when they walked in. How often do you hear that?
I've heard it more than a few times. But the education part is still a problem if people don't have a feasible choice. I mean, education assumes that they could, you know, have a choice after being informed. And that's one of the myths, at least in several parts of the country. I mean, you know, virtually all new housing has been burdened by HOAs, by local government mandate for decades.
Yeah.
In many places. And so claiming that people have a choice, that's just a, you know, a well-worn industry myth that they chose, you know, to be burdened by all these things.
How about having a disclosure? The disclosure is that here is, if you buy a house that's in an HOA,
yes,
and you, it has to be something printed and something they read and something they initial that they understood. And then they have to also sign a piece of paper saying that they will look at an HOA encumbered property. I mean, that's the only way you're going to educate people, is right up front, before an agent even puts a buyer in a car. And they say, this is what's available. If you are not comfortable with this, you need to sign this piece of paper telling me that I am not to show you anything in an HOA. I mean, it's going to be a really short trip around the block trying to find something. Yes.
Shoot. I mean, I've gotten attacked. Realtors just, when someone's sole fundamental requirement is that the property be non-HOA property, and realtors just start attacking them left and right. Why would you want to do that? That severely limits your choices. Well,
it does limit their choices because there are no options, as you pointed out.
Well, you know, so does any constraint. You know, if you say you want a four-bedroom house or a two-car garage or, you know, anything else, but why is it that they get so bent out of shape when you say, no HOA? And of course, the realtors often know nothing about the HOAs. Some of them will even sell it or try and conceal the fact that it's burdened by an HOA. I've gotten paperwork from realtors after specifically asking for, you know, property that had certain features and no HOA, and, you know, there's still an HOA there. And then they'll try and tell you, it's
dormant.
A passive one. Oh, yeah, it's a good one. You know,
it's
like
dormant.
As if any such thing existed.
I got a call one day from a guy, because in Virginia you have 72 hours to get your documents and then back out. And I got a call from a guy, and he said, we bought a house, and we specifically said no HOA, and now I am being given a disclosure packet.
what do I do? I said,
get out.
Right. I said, you're sophisticated enough to know that you don't want one. You have, by law, 72 hours in Virginia to say no, and you get your earnest money deposit back. I would recommend that you do it. About a year, 18 months later, I heard from him. I have a problem. I said, what's your problem? He says, well, remember that house? We went ahead and bought it. I said, okay. Why did you do that? Because the realtor told us that the association was dormant. There was no one there. Nothing had happened. I said, okay. So what's the problem? And, well, apparently the dormant HOA came to life again and started demanding money. To work on some projects. And that wasn't supposed to happen because, you see, Bill, the HOA was dormant.
Right. It's passive.
It's
a good HOA. It sounds like the only good one is a dead one. But
yeah. Yeah. But the thing is, once the documents are there, once the covenants are there, once you've actually signed the dotted line, you're liable. He says to me, do I have to pay this? I said, yeah, you do. He says, but they told me. I said, I don't care what they told you. They also told you there was an HOA there. I said, and I told you that it could come back to life. And you chose to go, yeah, but all our stuff was on the moving van. I said, yeah, well.
You know, Sue, it's also always funny that the industry always wants to exclude all those carrying costs. You know, they really don't have any empirical evidence about HOAs preserving value for any owners, and their analysis, in any event, as poor as it is, always seems to exclude the carrying costs associated with that, the assessments, the special assessments, the cost of, you know, lawsuits to the targeted victim homeowners, the risk of lawsuits, the degradation of health, the negative impact in your workplace because of what you're having to deal with at your home because of the, you know, whoever's running the HOA. Those things are always excluded from any analysis you hear from the industry because, you know, those things just don't happen. It's just a happy, happy, happy world. I mean, that's what the CCRs are there for, is they ensure that bad things don't happen and that property values always increase and, you know, it's rainbow bits and unicorns in HOA land.
Rainbow bits and unicorns. I like that. Well, you and I know that that's not quite the truth. What the industry will also say is that we focus on the ones that are bad and the ones that have had problems, and they are just a very small minority of all the HOAs. Why don't we ever talk about the happy ones? Bill, I'd be happy to talk about the happy ones. Do you know of any?
I don't know of any, and I always find it interesting that it's the same industry people that are always opposing the homeowners in any court action and in the legislature. What, you know, these things are always painted as such epitomes of democracy, and yet you're going to find the trade group there opposing the right to vote, opposing the right to run for office, opposing open records, opposing open meetings, you know.
Because we can't burden the board members in the management companies with all our petty requests now, can we?
Oh, well, I mean, absolutely. You know, at least there's starting to be some legislative activity or even recognition that these management companies have been engaged in the unauthorized practice of law for a long time. And hopefully there will start being sanctions, including monetary ones and criminal sanctions against these management companies and their owners for a lot of the activity they've been engaged in.
How are we handling that, though, Bill? What we're doing is we're saying, okay, management companies, you've been bad, and so now we're going to license you. And in order to get that license, you're going to have to go to class, and we're going to train you. And guess who does the training? and then, you know, you've got this panel, and if you do anything bad, then you'll have to go in front of the panel, and the panel will decide what to do with you. You may lose your license. Who sits on the panel?
to Industry Hacks.
Hello. Is this really and truly a solution to the problem?
No. But, I was referring to unauthorized practice of law, and they're not going to get around that by simply sitting in the class. I mean, if they don't have a law license, then they're committing a crime, and they should be facing criminal sanctions for that, as opposed to local government turning its head the other way. But, I'm confident these things are failing left and right. Thank goodness for the Internet, which is disclosing the practices of this trade group, the industry, and, you know, the fact that these are not isolated instances at all. I mean, Shu, you routinely discuss examples of embezzlement. I mean, how many embezzlement cases have made the news the last few years? The industry would like to have you believe it's isolated because they try to suppress disclosure of that information. They don't want people to have open records. They don't want open meetings. They don't want this stuff ever making the news. And it's the industry people that are actually the ones that are embezzling the money to begin with. Of course they don't want open records or open meetings or homeowners to be able to find out how much is being filched from the from the HOA bank accounts. It's
millions and billions.
Oh, it's a huge number.
And as I've always said, I think that the ones we know about are nothing more than the tip of the iceberg, because there's so many of them that go unreported.
Right.
Because there's this notion that if you say in my association, our management company stole $3 million, then your property values are going to go down.
Is that my hard property values? Bad happens here because we don't disclose that bad things happen here.
You know, that's exactly. Do you know how many times I've heard that? We can't talk about that. Our property values will plummet. My God, you idiots.
Well, and then also that's kind of like the rape, very much like the rape, the history of how rape has been handled in the criminal courts and elsewhere. You know, you can't talk about being abused because that would be shameful to the family, or you're damaged goods and you can't sell your unit, type of a thing. And or you're tarnishing the reputation of the rapist, which, you know, in this case would be the management company. The focus was on shutting up the victim as opposed to going after the perpetrator. And I think that that's changing with these HOA vendors, just as it did with, the rape victims. And the whole industry paints them as, there's always going to be a few disgruntled people. You mean all the people you, dispossessed of their homes and took all the equity that they had? And, you know, those people, are those the ones you're talking about? Yeah.
We're talking to Bill Davis, and you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. We're coming to you from Fairfax Radio. Bill, I've been at this for a long time, as you well know. And many moons ago, before the Internet, before you even knew that your next-door neighbor was in trouble, because that's how isolated everyone was, and if you ever said anything to anyone, the standard answer was, you must be the only one who feels that way. Nobody else does.
Right.
You know, so it's like there's something wrong with you. You are the problem because everyone else is happy, happy, happy.
Right.
Well, somehow we managed to reach out, and a bunch of us got together in the Washington, Maryland and Virginia areas, and we started an organization. It's now defunct. It did not survive because everybody in it decided they couldn't fix the problem, and so they moved out of their HOAs and decided they weren't going to work on it. Yeah, Council for Homeowner Rights, CHR. But we tried, one of the things that a few people tried to do was to increase the size of the organization. So they went through and they found court cases. And they tracked down the people who had problems with their HOAs. And they went to them and they found them and they said, "Hey, Bill, we found your name that you used to live in this HOA. Do you know that people were so ashamed and so embarrassed, they didn't want their names associated with any of this? And they would not participate, would not talk to us, would not have anything to do with us?
Right.
Because of the shame involved?
Right. It's like a rape case. I mean, it's the same. Yes.
And so, that was something that was a personal problem. And then some people started talking. And then some people just went all over the place. Sometimes they went a little too far and a little too extreme, so you tended to turn them off a little bit. But the fact is, it's good to talk about it, because now all of a sudden people know that they're not alone. And I think the internet had a huge role in providing that.
It did. Because the victims start reaching out and trying to find out, well, is it really true that these are only isolated instances, or I'm one of, X disgruntled people? No, it's not. I mean, there's the nice thing about the internet, because the industry folks have worked really hard to keep all the homeless isolated from each other. They have access to all the records.
Yeah.
I found it incredible that one of the management companies here is trying to sell its new security service, where they have this faux-looking police car that's loaded with wireless and everything else, where any ex-con working for the management company can get every bit of information about you in a heartbeat, or any other resident in a heartbeat, wirelessly. But here you are as an owner, and you're not allowed to have even information about prior ownership of your property, even who the other homeowners are in the subdivision. I mean, why is this so vendor-friendly when the actual owners, who are supposedly also the investors and the owners and everything else, aren't allowed to have this information? I mean, that's really what's troubling to me, is that this industry group has been so successful at lobbying legislatures to prevent homeowners from having access to the information, or are coming up with these ludicrous arguments about why the vendor should be able to have that information, but the homeowner should not. And I think there's a common theme here today about the information and the control of the dissemination of the information and who can get access to it, that this industry as a whole has worked really hard to, cover up the bad stuff, prevent homeowners from having any access to it, because, if they had a choice, they probably wouldn't buy if they saw what was really going on in these places.
Well, the other thing, too, is, there was, I'm trying to think of his name, David Wilcox. David Wilcox is in California, and he's a business owner. He's an author. And I guess his daughter had problems. And David is one of the people that I met when I first got on the internet and first learned how to turn a computer on, which was not something that was particularly intuitive. But he had set up a website that was really quite terrific. And what he did was he registered all of the HOAs, and we're including condos, co-ops, and HOAs, I mean the whole thing. It was all done by state, and it was done alphabetically. So if you lived in Happy Homes from Hell HOA in Timbuktu, you sent your story to David, and he would list Happy Homes from Hell in Timbuktu under Timbuktu, and he would put your email there. It's sort of people who wanted to move into an HOA could do that. What this did, which was very, very interesting, is that now board members would go on there and they would find their association. Here's the president of the association. He'd find out that somebody had dimed him out, and it's right there on the internet for everyone to see. And so they started sending emails to David saying, would you please take us off? We've learned our lesson. We've fixed our ways. We've mended our ways. But 20 years ago, or however long ago it was, that David had that up. Maybe it wasn't quite that long ago. There weren't that many HOAs, but I think it got to the point where he was just inundated with requests to put this on, and then the people coming in and saying, hey, we didn't do that.
Right. Well, you know, the industry groups lobby hard against having any registration of these things or any identification of these things. I mean, they prefer that the information not be known, or that the scope of the abuse not be known. But you can't start doing anything about it until you start identifying the problem. And I think that requires identification of all these things, the type of involuntary membership association that they are, and, you know, what the documents look like. You can also follow trends across states. You see what the industry's doing. And I think it'd be a great way for the legislature to be able to, study what's going on in these places.
Legislature does not seem to be terribly interested.
Well, Bill, ours in particular has a real problem because so many of them profit from this, but they're not real interested in solving the problem in many cases. But a registration scheme would help to identify, how many of them are out there, and it's a step towards, getting rid of some of the problems.
Well, currently those stats are controlled by the industry. I mean, I can call Frank Rathbun and say, how many associations do we have now worldwide, or, in the U.S.? And they're that's the only place that I know of that you're going to get those kind of statistics. And I have a little bit of a problem with that.
Well, I do too, because when you look at all the inaccurate information that comes out of that group, you have to wonder about all the information that comes out of that group.
Well, I think that, if you're the sole generator of this information, you can
right.
put a spin on it any way you want.
Right.
And even though the numbers may be accurate, the spin might just sort of spin it out of the zone, if you will.
Yes.
And so from that perspective, I do have a problem with it. And I don't know if the states actually keep records, and I don't think the states do. You'd have to go jurisdiction by jurisdiction.
Well, many of them don't, but I know that some of them, I believe Colorado recently enacted, within the last year or two, a statutory requirement to register with some state agency, and boy, the industry was up in arms about, they're going to have to identify, the HOAs. But they were adamantly opposed to that, but it still passed anyway. Well, as you know, I think that there's not a cure for these things, and I don't think you do either, but you can start disclosing the magnitude of the problem by identifying just how big of a, how many people are affected by these things, for starters.
Well, in Virginia, they decided they were going to start registering, so every association has got to register on an annual basis. And you have to send this to Virginia, to the state, not the local municipality.
Oh.
And there's a fee associated with this registration. And this fee becomes part of a fund that the industry controls.
Great.
Yeah. And so, if it benefits the industry in some way, they're going to be all for it. And if it doesn't benefit the industry at all, then they're going to be arguing against it. But in Virginia, it benefits them because they actually have control. See, one of the things that this fund initially was supposed to do was to educate people about associations. And I was asked to submit and request funding for the radio show. And I said I would not be interested in doing that. I mean, I did put in for it because I wanted to watch them twist and turn, but I was not going to accept it. And then years later, they came back and said, because they kept sending me stuff, asking me to put in a proposal. And why didn't I request funding for the show? And I said, because then you would have control over what I talked about and what I covered on the show. I said, that's why I don't do it.
Right. It's the control of information again. Only positive news about HOAs are supposed to go out there.
So for many, many years, every January, I'd get this big envelope from the state of Virginia asking me to please submit a proposal. And every year I just put it in the trash.
Well, maybe it could be study the elimination of HOAs and see.
Let's talk about that.
Okay.
Let's talk about eliminating HOAs. Now, there's two schools of thoughts out there. Some people believe that there's no way you're going to get rid of HOAs. Other people, and I'm in the latter category, think that, yeah, you can get rid of HOAs. You probably won't get rid of the existing ones. But just like you mandate them now, you can ban them in the future.
I think that many of the existing ones can and will be eliminated through additional changes. To me, it's kind of like slavery. People, oh, no, the plantations are going to fail. You know, that's supposed to justify continuing this, enslavement of workers. It's like, no. You know, slavery's dead. Plantation needs to, come up with a different way of finding workers other than slaves. And so I think HOAs are very much the same way. If you move to eliminate foreclosure power, for starters, I believe that these are nothing but unconstitutional taxes. Corporations don't have the power to tax, and that's what this is, because it's a perpetual lien for future debt, not debt today, and you have absolutely no say over what that debt is. And a perpetual lien into the future that can never be paid off is not a lien that is recognized by any other comparison. The only thing that compares to is a tax lien by local government. And corporations do not have authority to tax. And I think there needs to be some challenges on these things being unconstitutional taxes. They're also not equal. You know, the developers' lots are all in many states, maybe not all states, are always excluded from having to pay anything. I just want to give you one short example in that shoe, and it's our case. We're at the Supreme Court now, $700,000 in attorney's fees for the plaintiffs. I'm one of the plaintiffs. And the developer, while that case is pending, has filed a suit against the HOA that it controls. Okay, remember, the developer lost the lawsuit for indemnification. And the developer is seeking to have the HOA pay for all of its legal expenses and any judgment against that. Well, guess what? I don't know what to think about the outcome of that case, given that the developer also controls the HOA, but only the homeowners have to pay. So, you know, this type of nonsense, it's just like the homeowners just pay and pay and pay. Even when they're right, they end up, footing the bill for this stuff. And it's because of the structure. It's not constitutional. The people there had no control over these things. And to me, it doesn't matter whether it's the homeowners in control or the developer in control. It's often better when the developer is in control. They don't have the pettiness that the homeowners often do. And they're, I think if you eliminate that foreclosure authority, recognizing it as an unconstitutional tax, people aren't going to pay unless they like what the HOA is doing. They're not going to want to be members unless the HOA is going to share information with them, and unless it's doing something positive for them. The utility stuff, that needs to be completely severed from HOAs.
I agree.
HOAs are not utility service providers, and they should never, the utilities are regulated, the HOAs are not. And you and I have talked about that before, but there's problem after problem where people pay assessments and it's supposed to pay for water and things like that. HOA board can do whatever they want to with it. And, they may not pay the water bill. So Now you don't have water, and there's nothing you can do about it because the HOA is acting as an intermediary between you and the utility service provider. There needs to be a halt put to that right off the bat. There's no reason for that whatsoever. I do think there's a way of killing them. I think they're dying anyway. It's just a question of how fast.
But they're still building more of them. I mean, one of the great grand ideas that came about some years ago was reinventing associations. And the idea was that the association would take care of you from cradle to grave. And, you know, it would be these, like, mini nations within many nations, and you know, you'd be within these four walls, and they'd educate you, and they'd have a hospital over there, and they'd bring you, you know, bring you into the world, they'd put you through school, potty train you, get you started on your career, have you walk to work, because it's all going to be right there. And then, you know, gosh, when you die, we take you to the same hospital, put you in the room next door, say the last rites, and then wheel you down to the cemetery, and there you go. I mean, you don't have to go anywhere. The association will take care of you all the way.
Well,
isn't that a scary thought?
It's scarier to think that, you know, participation is involuntary, and it has to be a private company as opposed to, I mean, I don't support this in local government either, don't get me wrong. But, the idea that you're going to be forced to participate in that scheme and you have to be a member of this private organization sounds to me like what's going to happen is they'll just, you know, you said from cradle to grave, I suspect they'll just put you in the grave that much quicker and, take whatever you left behind.
Well, a lot of these places actually say, a lot of the retirement communities, the house belongs to the community. You buy it, but then when you die, it reverts back to the community, to the association.
That's crazy.
And it is, and people voluntarily go into this. Oh, yeah, we need this.
Well, there's real estate scams, you know, they have been since the dawn of time. That's another bad one. But the HOA one, I agree with you. I do not think that there's a cure other than elimination. And they fail time and time and time again. I think some of the things that are going to contribute to the acceleration of their demise, the industry itself is a huge contributor to that. I mean, their predatory practices, their whole goal of wanting HOAs is to prey upon the homeowners and the HOA organization itself. And that's certainly been rather destructive. You know, the federal government has started looking at eliminating financing for homes in these places. I mean, they're nothing but burdens. What transfer fees? Why do you have to pay a transfer fee to a management company or to a private corporation? It doesn't own the property.
Because, Bill, they've got to go into the computer and take your name out and put the buyer's name in there. That is so burdensome. And you know, they do that during work hours where they're already being paid for it. But thank you, legislators. You go ahead and say, okay, you can go ahead and charge a transfer fee. $5,000 is not unreasonable for something like that, is it?
Right. Well, I know there's a place in Houston where it's probably up to $10,000. And
you're
that's
kidding.
No. And
I was being facetious when I said $5,000.
I'm not, though. And that goes to a foundation that the developer controls. Homeowners are not members of, they're involuntary funders of, and they can't decide who's on the board of that organization, how it spends its funds, or anything else. It's very much a control of money and rerouting, divesting the homeowners of their money one way or another. I mean, there's just been, HOAs are just one way of doing that. They've come up with several schemes, the master HOA, sub-HOA, the HOA and the foundation.
They have all kinds of names for them, don't they?
They do. They do.
They have all kinds of CIDs and CDCs, and God only knows what else they have.
They do. Well, even common interest development. What's the common interest? You know, I mean, that's just a silly another marketing term, the CID.
Yeah.
All you have is a common liability. There's not a common interest. I mean, unless you're talking about housing, but that's not particular to a subdivision. Here locally, there's a subdivision where the roads have gotten into such a poor state over 30 years. You know, the HOA was taking money from the homeowners. It was tasked with, it's supposed to be essentially a road maintenance association. But instead of, you know, being a road maintenance association, they decided to get in the business of threatening homeowners, suing homeowners. It's been very lucrative for the HOA attorney, but the roads have never been attended to, and the county has just taken over a bunch of the roads, which should mean the elimination of the HOA because it didn't have any other purpose. But the board members now are so concerned about the loss of their, you know, control of their regime or even having a regime that they can sit, you know, higher than all their neighbors and sit in judgment of them and have their kangaroo courts and you know, impose fines and all this other nonsense. They're actually now trying to use what's left of the budget or left of the road maintenance funds to sue the county to try and get the roads back. Now, for all the other homeowners out there, they've been taxpayers. You know, they're taxpayers like anyone else in the county.
Yeah.
These roads are open to the public. Why is it that everyone else can have county-maintained roads, yet these people pay taxes and they pay assessments, and the roads still don't get taken care of? So they would, and in fact, it's gotten so ugly at this place. This is a very large subdivision that consists of multiple sections. And what's been happening is homeowners in section after section have been seceding from the HOA by voting on a section-by-section basis to terminate the restrictive covenant that burdens their property with the HOA. And that's great when you can do it, you know, that it's worked out that way for them. But the HOA is even suing the homeowners in those subdivisions because they view them as, their revenue-generating sections. For what? To maintain the board's regime? I mean, you know, it offers nothing of value to them. They've suffered the entire time through this place. There's no good way to get rid of these HOA board members. I mean, they really need to try killing the HOA, but they can't do that unless the whole subdivision does. So they seceded on a section-by-section basis to get out of that. And it's only a matter of time before the decision that the HOA manager gets to make is whether to pay their own check or to pay the HOA attorney's bill, and then the HOA will be gone. Thank goodness.
Well, it's funny. Years ago, I was doing some research online, and I found minutes from some municipal hearing. And it didn't say where it was from. There was nothing else attached to it. All it was this one page, and it was the minutes of one small portion of the meeting. And it seems that it was an association that had voted to suspend the association. Every single homeowner there except for one.
Who is that, the president of the board?
No, I don't know. I have no idea who it was. But this went before the local municipal body, and they were looking for permission to extinguish the association. One person said they were not in favor of that. They thought the association was good. The staff backed this one person up and said, we would not recommend allowing them to extinguish the association.
Wait a minute. I thought this was a voluntary agreement between homeowners. You're going to tell me the homeowners can't choose to get rid of the...
And you need. I mean, this was in excess of 99% of all the owners voted to get rid of it.
Yeah.
But the local municipal government and one homeowner said no. And guess what?
What?
It didn't happen.
Why did the local government have authority to override the...
I don't know. That's what I mean. It was just this one snippet out of, and I have no idea what state, what jurisdiction, where it was, what the association was, anything.
That's actually something similar to that's going on here, and I'm sure other states as well, where the city has dictated a number of restrictions that are going to be in the restrictive covenants, and the city has a vote over any amendments that are made to the restrictive covenants. Now, how is that? To me, that's an illegal ordinance machine. you know, because you're creating ordinances that haven't been adopted by the population. They're only being applied to a certain group of people, and of course it's going to be done to the city's benefit. But for the most part, it's trying to offload what should be city responsibilities for taxes being paid. It's trying to offload that to the HOA. So the people there are going to have to pay city taxes, and they're going to have to pay HOA assessments, and there's really no assurance that the HOA is going to provide these. I don't see HOAs providing services at all. They seem to be nothing but, you know, if you like being threatened or getting nasty grams in the mail or, you know, having to pay for a board member's liability insurance policy or pay assessments to an organization that has caused you, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in attorney's fees, if that's a service, I mean, let's redefine the word as far as I'm concerned. But these, the city has offloaded its responsibilities to the association, and that's why it doesn't want the association to be gone. They want somebody there besides themselves to be responsible for, you know, either providing a service or maintaining a property or something of that nature. And they want the property to be privately owned so it can stay on the tax rolls.
That's true.
As opposed to being a, you know, municipally owned and tax exempt property that they get no taxes from and have the obligation to maintain.
Bill, we've run out of time before we ran out of things to talk about.
Wow.
And you thought that we wouldn't be able to do this. Thank you so much, Bill. Thanks for joining
us. Thank you, Sue.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.